The Garnet Wager is a show where two players compete in a fantasy-style competition while watching episodes of The Genius. Players accumulate points based on the actions of their chosen fantasy contestants in the game show, and these points are tracked over the course of the season. The player that wins in fantasy points for that episode wins the episode, and can assign media homework for that episode. The loser must report back on that media at the end of the episode. This competition is not just for the hosts. Rules are made available to anyone who wants to play as you listen along with us. Welcome to Season 2. Welcome to the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Welcome to the Garnet Wager, the premier genius fantasy podcast. I'm joined by Sax Detmar. Sax, thank you for joining us. My name is Alan, and we're here to talk about The Genius.
I love the blues.
Do you like the real folk blues?
No.
What?
That's insincere blues.
Oh, I only like blues when it lies to me.
I'm only happy when it lies.
I'm only happy when... Oh, that's good. See, yours was good. We should have used that as the intro. Welcome to the Garnet Wager. I'm only happy when it lies. Hi, welcome. How are you doing, Six?
I'm getting by. How are you?
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
What? Just... I'm not on the end of my rope. That sounds really severe. I'm at the end of my semester, so I'm a bit burned out. But
you're frazzled.
That's exactly the word. I'm very frazzled. I'm about to be dropped into the water of not being in school for a long time, so I'm scared.
I know it's not actually a portmanteau, but I like to think that frazzled is a portmanteau of frayed and dazzled. I feel like it works really well.
Frayed like a rope.
Yes. Sort of like you're coming apart and you're stunned. That's just sort of like you're overwhelmed by it. Sensory overload.
It could be. Wait, it could be.
It's not.
That sounds smart enough that I don't know why that's wrong, why that wouldn't be true.
Because language usually doesn't make that much sense.
There are totally... Wait, fray... You're right! That's totally what it is!
Seriously?
Fray and fazzle. Germanic fazzle, which means to ravel out. And then fray, from the English word fray, to make frazzle,
I was close, at least. Huh. Weird. That, like, genuinely, yeah, I had no idea.
I looked up frazzle etymology, and I think you're in the right.
Hmm.
You're in the ballpark.
Well, speaking of ballparks, I went to an Angels game on Sunday, and that was the one bright spot in the last 2 weeks, because I've had a hard time. But
yikes.
We watched some genius, and we watched some really good genius. So,
did the Angels win? Were the Angels in the outfield?
Okay, so not only did they win, It was Angels versus Dodgers.
Oh, man.
And
frantically Googles which team is the Dodgers. Oh, the LA Dodgers.
Yeah, no, it's Los Angeles Angels versus Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yikes.
And, listen, I like baseball decently well. I'm not a hardcore fan, but I enjoy baseball. And I really am happy for, like, whatever team you like, unless you like the Dodgers, and then you can go to hell.
Wow.
So this was very satisfying.
Wow.
I also got to see Shohei Ohtani hit a home run. That was very exciting for me. Anyway, no one cares about any of this, but I had a good time.
Wait, you should watch Angels in the Outfield. That's my homework for you.
I've seen Angels in the Outfield.
Oh, is it about you? Because it's about like a little kid being excited about the Angels in the outfield.
And then got an angel dies? With you now. Yeah, yeah.
someone like dies and it's weird. Anyways, hi, we're talking about the genius. We watched season 1 episode 6. Season 2 episode 6.
Alan?
Yes.
When are we going to get tired of the genius?
When it stops being sick as hell?
When the angels win the pennant.
Hey, I'm sorry, we
can actually talk about our topic.
Which is the Monopoly game, kind of. Not really. Yeah. That's not really the topic.
So
technically the episode is called Monopoly Game, but that's not what this fucking episode is about at all.
No. I imagine... So I got a message from listener Reese on Saturday. And he was like, hey, when you watch episode 6, message me and let me know. I want to talk about some things. and I have, and he hasn't gotten back to me. Because it's been a short window since I watched it. It hasn't been that many hours. But I have a feeling that Reese hates this episode. I just have this feeling. Yeah, I have a feeling that this is one of Reese's least favorite episodes because it's full of basically everything Reese hates, which is people, like, political metagaming more than actually playing the game and, like, kind of playing dishonorably and bending the rules. And this episode is nuts.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't feel like a genius episode. Well, it kind of does. It does. It's the stuff I like about the genius. But it's not a main match. Like, it's wild. So this is, I think, better than any episode in recent memory, a perfect confirmation that the show is not scripted. Because you would never write a main match with all of those rules and then throw it in the goddamn garbage and go, wait, no. But what about this safe that we set up many episodes ago? What if that was the whole conflict? And then also the main match gets taken care of, and then also the DM collapses like an exploding star. Oh, it's so much.
There's so much politics to talk about. So much scheming.
It all centers on basically Songmin and Yuan are collaborating to open up the safe that contains the token of immortality. Mm-hmm. Because they now both have enough hints that they can basically figure out what it is, but... neither of them wants to give the other person all of the information because, you know, there's only one token of immortality. So one of them has the information about where the safe is and the other one knows the combination to the safe, but they don't have the other piece. So they're both just kind of doing some really good wheeling and dealing. What did you think about the, like, build up to all this stuff?
Gosh, there were several payoffs to it, and I guess we'll get to those, but I feel like the build was really fun. I do feel a little bad about how it overshadowed the main match so much.
Yeah, somebody worked on that.
Yeah, and I mean, it seemed like an interesting set of rules. I would have liked to see it played. but, like, I don't... It's... I feel like this is... This is exactly what Songmin does.
Yeah.
This is such classic Songmin. And frankly, I'm coming around on Yuan generally, but I'm a little disappointed in him for not knowing that this is Songmin, right? Like,
yeah.
You should, like, if Songmin's being this shady about it, you do not show him anything until he's paid out. And, like, I think the realization you have to have there is, like, okay, the information he has is actually more valuable than the information you have. It's harder to get the safe open than it is to find the safe. Multiple people here know how to find the safe. Songmin is the only one who knows how to open it. So, at that point, what you say is, like, okay, if we can't do a 50-50 equal partnership, you have to give me something. Because I bet Songmin would have gone for that.
I think so, probably.
But, you know, enough backseat gaming. Yuan and Songmin go back and forth, and finally Yuan's like, okay, fine, I'll show it to you. And then Songmin shows him his clue, which is, on its own, useless. and not only is it on its own useless, Songmin has already previously removed the context from which to decipher the clue. The clue is basically several locations, several, I think, cities in Korea. Yeah. And there was an atlas in that room, And if you looked at the pages that the cities were on in the Atlas, that was the combination. And he tore out those pages already.
Right.
So he's already completely neutralized Yuan's ability to make use of that information.
Yeah, effectively, getting the benefit of trading clues without making his clue useful.
Mm-hmm.
It's really smart. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, you want that's brilliant in a way in how simple the plan is, but it works.
And I think the other thing that's interesting is I feel like Yuan is politically one of the people there you can kind of screw and get away with. Because I feel like if you screw over Jinho, or if you screw over, I mean, you screw over Yu Young, it's like alliances and connections, that's going to come back to bite you. No one's really tying themselves to Yuan.
Yeah, he's kind of playing, I'll be honest with you, he's kind of playing sort of Jinho in the first season, mm-hmm. where it's like, I'm going to do well in the games, and I'm going to just pick who's winning, but I'm not associating myself with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's working for him so far. Because like you said, he is not somebody who, if you betray, you're going to lose. He's not going to throw you under the bus. He'll just throw you under the bus regardless.
Yeah, he doesn't really have a way to leverage that much. If you make a grudge with him, it's like, well, I mean, what are you going to do? You don't have the political power to do anything about this. So what do you think of generally all those events conspire, Songmin gets the token of immortality. There's a brief scramble where Songmin briefly pretends to not know, that the safe has been opened, and that falls apart pretty quickly. I had been hoping that he would, just because I again, plays not players, right? The idea of pretending that I opened it and someone else had already gotten it would have been really good, but I guess mm-hmm. there was no way to relock the safe and people knew it was locked previously and it just didn't work.
Right, you're also revealing a lot of information to people who don't need to know by saying that. Because mm-hmm. some people don't even know about the safe yet. I think Yu Young is finding out in this episode that there exists a safe. meanwhile, everyone else is scrambling to unlock and she's like, oh shit, there's a token in there, what's up?
Well, the only person who doesn't find out is Jung Hyun.
Oh my god, where was he this episode?
Just stumbling around talking about his kids.
I forgot that one of my players was not in the episode functionally. Yeah. I'm never going to win this season.
He avoided getting picked for the DM again. That's good, right?
True. Well, again, by not existing.
Yeah, by
and
not
being,
in the, being
conversation. In the orbit of the colossal destruction that happens in that DM. We'll get there. I don't want to rush there.
Yeah. Now there's so much to dissect.
And Yu Young definitely does stuff in this episode. Like her play, and her relationship to Jiwon ends up being mm-hmm. really important in this episode.
It does. So, once the rules of the game are revealed for the main match, it's basically the way it works is it's like a card trading game. It almost reminded me of Catan in a way.
Yeah. It's totally, yeah. Like resource management with trading. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And, so you have to have your special, ID token if you want to access your cards. The dealers keep them in a safe, locked-up vault. And it's like, okay, present your ID and you can trade your cards. And we'll keep them here. We'll keep them safe. Just have your ID. And in the chaos of Songmin getting the token of immortality and everyone trying to figure out what happened, Doohee's token disappears.
His token for the game, you mean?
Yeah, his ID that allows him to access his cards.
I was confused the first time he said, guys, I lost my ID, because I thought he lost his driver's license. And I was like, what are you doing? And then I realized it was for the game and I'm like, oh shit. This is a play, is what's happening here.
What do you think about that play? About someone we'll talk a little more about the identity and what it means, but right now, it was stolen. It was not, he didn't lose it. He left it on a table and someone else took it.
Yeah, so, okay, I'll be honest with you. I had heard rumblings right before watching this episode about something bad happening to Doohee. So I spent the whole time wondering what that was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out it was everything. It turns out this whole episode is about throwing him under the bus and then driving the bus at full speed. Like, you realize once you know that, that the beginning of the episode, even before the cold open, is everybody dumping on him. And being like, oh, I don't even use Kakao Talk anymore because he's gonna hack my phone. Like, he's a bad, I can't trust Dewey. He's terrible. What is this guy gonna do? And the episode foreshadowing this time is just him on the floor of the lobby, like looking up, like, like forlornly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, something's gonna happen to this guy. And then he got his ID stolen, and I was like, uh-oh, here we go. But I don't love people taking away other people's ability to just play the game. That almost feels mm-hmm. unfair to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there's this, like, a question I get pressed on sometimes is, like, so I liked what we refer to as the Jinho, right?
Yeah.
The Garnet, like, borrow play, the Garnet, like, taking and then sort of, like, spending it around. And I feel like there are a couple of things that make the Jinho okay to me, and one of them is just like, well, the producers clearly okayed it, right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the producers are making a TV show, and I'm sure they'll bend the rules to make a more dramatic show, and I think they did here, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a great line on its own. I don't think that's enough. But the other thing is that Songmin made sure the Garnet got back to him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Songmin didn't take it and pocket it. Songmin was like, here, I'll get it back to you in a roundabout way that doesn't hurt you. It just sort of manipulates your emotions. And it's like, okay, that's rough, but, like, I feel like that's within acceptable bounds.
It doesn't prevent him from playing the game.
Right, right. I mean, like, if it had been a Garnet game, if it had been a game where, like, and the way you play is you spend or invest Garnets, that would have been beyond the pale.
Yeah. They used that idea for some good comedy in this episode, by the way. I think it's Yoo Young and Jae Kyun who are both, or Jae Young, sorry, who see that you can get rid of one of your, like, death cards by spending 10 Garnets. And they're like, well, cool, great and good. Can't do that. Don't have 10 Garnets. Like,
yep.
Having the Garnets be essential to doing stuff in the game is always, I like that a lot. But it's also kind of funny when people just are like, well, unless I do a trade and no one's going to want to trade me their Garnets, I guess I'm not playing this game well.
What do you think about... brief tangent.
Yeah.
You and I both come from an MMORPG background, right?
I am an MMORPG, yeah.
And when I see stuff like that, like, oh, and you can pay 10 Garnets to defuse the bomb, I'm like, oh, a gold sink.
Right. Yeah, it is, but yeah.
It's like, oh, here's the organizers of the show being like, here, we'll add this extra rule that, like, I mean, sure, it makes the game a little bit more complex, but also, it's a way for us to vent some of the money so we don't have to pay as much at the end of the show.
That's what it is. I think it's also meant to encourage people to use their Garnets so that there isn't a monopoly on Garnets. Like, if you're winning by a ton, you will be way more encouraged to use those and keep winning than to just hoard your Garnets.
Because
you're better off winning main matches than you are ending with the most Garnets. You know what I mean?
But on the other hand, I mean, like, that doesn't always... Like, do you know how many Garnets Songmin has right now?
I don't.
28.
So he's not using them and he doesn't care.
No, he's loaded.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Junghyun has, like, 8. Like, it is weird. The economy of the actual Garnets, like, in the middle of the season is very interesting. But I do think it is, yeah, that's a very good analysis that it's just a money... It's a way for them to reduce the end game payout and to keep them... It's also a leveler. It keeps the numbers even.
Yeah, a method of controlling the economy.
Right, exactly. Like, I'm not, like exactly like you said, like a gold sink. The WoW token, if you will. Oh, God. I looked to the side like I just heard my worst enemy. Can we real briefly, speaking of video game stuff, talk about how this show keeps using the menu music noises or the menu sounds from Street Fighter 4, and it weirds me out because I might be the only person who's noticing that.
Yeah, I didn't notice that at all, and I played hundreds of hours of Street Fighter 4.
Like the brrr, brrr, ba-ding, ba-ding, like the specific chimes of the menu selection in that game are all throughout this show. In the last couple of episodes, I've had it too, but I didn't want to bring it up. It's weird. I mean, we've talked about, like, season one being the Cowboy Bebop soundtrack season, and like, the way that they use music is funny and the licensing, but I always forget that sound effects are also licensed, and or I'm just like, all right, I associate certain sound effects with certain games.
Hmm. I mean, we got more Cowboy Bebop this episode.
That's true. Oh, very good stuff. I'm trying to find the next big thing. Oh, yeah. So I also just loved... I love Songmin in this episode in general. I think I compare it to, like, that meme of, like, when you look to your friend and you know you're both about to go wild, and then it's, like, somebody smiling. And that's me and Songmin whenever he realizes he's fucked someone over and it's worked. And he just, like, buries his head downwards and is, like shaking from laughter because he's just, like, a villain and he's so happy with himself. He does it, like, several times in this episode, and it's really... It's so much joy. It's so much devilish joy, but I get such a kick out of it every time he does that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it contrasts also with... and we'll talk about the DM, but Jiwon during the DM... having, like, the most dejected I think I've ever seen a person look outside of, like, conflict, like, life conflict. Mm-hmm. I saw a man's heartbreak. It was a lot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, at this point, I think they start kind of playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have the Token of Immortality, and Songmin says he's going to give it to Doohee. Is that correct?
Yeah. And meanwhile, like, so the first offer is, like, Yuan is making these deals and being like, okay, like, Jiwon, you and me, we're gonna win this together. You work with me, right?
Yeah.
Because he's basically figured out that Jiwon must have taken the ID. And
right.
He's like, okay, if you have the ID, then we can win this. But Jiwon gets a better offer because Songmin, yeah, approaches Doohee and is like, listen, if you pick Jinho, you can have the Token of Immortality. And that means you don't have to go to the DM with Jinho. You can send Yuan in there as well. And the two StarCraft players can duke it out. And you can sit on the sidelines. Safe.
Yeah, exactly. He's just like, yeah, you can watch them fight. You don't have to be involved. It's great. It's so safe. The devil tempting you.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gives him what he thinks is a Token of Immortality.
Now, I will give... props to Doohee here. Doohee is a little tricky here. Doohee's like, I mean, you know, we're not going to have time during the whole chaos of the DM. Why don't you just give me the token now? And if he hadn't done that, this could have gone pretty differently.
If he hadn't what? Sorry.
If he hadn't, he's like, Songmin's offer was like, once you pick Jinho, I'll give you the token.
Right.
And Doohee's like, there's no reason not to give it to me now. And Songmin's like, oh, okay. The reason is to ensure your loyalty so that you can't just have, you know, like, payment before the job is done.
it's clear that Doohee is not just letting himself get effed over right there. It's not, like, acceptance. Because what happens, and I'm fascinated by the psychology of this moment, is Doohee kind of cracks. And it almost feels like he knows that he's been getting fucked over so much this season.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants to make his own play, not through the benefit of someone else, not predictably. Just let him make a play that's going to affect things in a big way. Like, just throw a grenade into a crowded place and see what happens.
Right.
Apologies for the very severe metaphor. But, yeah. Because he gets it. And everything leading up to the DM is just like this big buildup, and it's legitimately kind of scary. And they're like, "Dude, you lost the main match. You're going to the DM?" And he goes, "No, I'm not, fuckers. Take this, Yu Young."
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically sends her to the DM instead of Yuan. And they're like, "Wait, what?" And then,
the order is he's like,
sorry,
well,
please give the right order, yeah.
He's like, okay, so I've got to pick an opponent for the DM. I'm going to pick Yu Young. Like, well,
yes.
And the way he specifically does it, he's like, I'm sorry, Young, and starts to shake Jinho's hand, and Jinho's like, yep, I knew this was coming. And he says, it's Yu Young. And then Jinho's like, wait, what the fuck?
What?
And then Songmin is also like, what the fuck? But doesn't seem that worried for some reason.
Because he knows something spicy
right,
is going on.
Right, but we don't yet. And then he's like, and he pulls out the token, and he's like, you'll be playing with Hong Chul.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, they set it up like, this is what's going to happen. It's another, weird misdirect. Like, you're thinking this show is going to, this episode is going to have a big focus on the main match. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't. And this is like, oh, now we know what the DM's going to look like. It's going to be really interesting. It's two people who got fucked over in interesting ways doing their best.
Mm-hmm.
Hong Chu spends like a whole minute being like, oh, this should be fun. Like, wow, this game's really exciting and good. I'm excited to do the DM again.
And then Doohee walks over.
Turn to the announcer.
Yeah, Doohee walks over, hands in the token of immortality, and Doohee walks back, like, all smiles. And then the announcer, like, the dealer, our favorite dealer, the lady dealer, says, this token is a fake.
I just, like, audibly yelled at that moment. The work required. So, did Songmin make a fake token?
Did you forget? No.
No, what did he do?
The token of immortality envelope included a fake, and it's like, here, this one's real, this one's fake. Screw somebody. It just handed him a gun with one bullet in it.
Beautiful. Oh my god, it's a beautiful, beautiful moment. Everything about Doohee's confidence and the camera in my head version of this scene is the camera is like, everybody's shocked at Doohee, who's smiling at how smart he is, and then the camera turns to the dealer, and the dealer's like, this is not a token, bud. What? Just shattered.
And we keep getting these shots of Songmin, and you're like, man, he's unhappy, but he's taking it better than I would have expected. Yeah, oh my god.
Yeah. Oh my god.
And it's, there's so much to this moment, right?
Yeah.
So, I feel like I totally understand where Doohee's coming from not honoring the deal, right? Even before he finds out it's a fake, it's like, well, listen, he's in a position where he's going to lose the game because allies of Songmin screwed him. And so, like, Songmin's friends shoved him off a cliff, and then Songmin showed up with a rope. Like, gee, thanks, Songmin. I'm so fucking grateful, you know?
Thanks. Yeah.
You don't, like... It doesn't make you like okay, now I owe you a life debt. I totally understand why he went off script. And I respect it, honestly. I respect his attempt to take things into his own, like, fade into his own hands in a greater way. I was at first really surprised that Songmin was making a play with a token of immortality, like, within moments of getting it, basically.
Yeah.
It was like, why wouldn't you want to hold on to that? I feel like the knowledge that other people have that you have the token was like a really powerful political chip. Why would you not? And it's like, oh, that's
because realized he will never get a better opportunity to use it.
Mm-hmm.
He got the perfect. He just got lucky and got the perfect opportunity. He walked into it.
Well, and he still has the token.
True, it doesn't run out. He just
hasn't had to pop it yet. It's like now everyone knows he has it, but like he used the fake token, which only had one use. So it turns out he got a shield and a bullet, not just a shield. And he used the bullet right away, which is like, okay, actually, that makes sense. He didn't get what he wanted from that bullet, but...
There is no better way to use that bullet. I can't even fathom a better way to use it than getting somebody to send themselves to the DM and then having them lose the DM.
Well, I mean, if it had gone the way he actually wanted, that would have been better. Like, a situation where it's like... My enemy and then like my worst enemy, everyone's enemy in the DM.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like Songmin says it numerous times across this episode and also previous episodes. And like part of it's politics, but part of it is not. Every time, like someone's like, there's a point in this episode where someone's like, so who here do you think could like Songmin? Like, you know, Jinho, who could take him? In a, like, if it went down to the finales, who could take him? And he's like, no one. He's like, well, you know, but I mean, like, he's not like, you know, he's not invincible. Like, there's someone here, and he's like, no one could take him. You are wrong. Yeah, 1v1, no one beats Jinho.
It's just a fact. The only way to beat him is to keep him out of a DM and to keep him out of a 1v1.
Mm-hmm. And, like, they did have a genuine shot here. Like, I think if it had been Jinho in the DM versus Doohee, the politics would have been such where people would have been like, I feel bad about what happened to Doohee. Let's save him against Jinho, and also Jinho's a huge threat, and we have to get... I mean, like, they turned on Doohee because of Jinho. Yeah. Because they were like, Jinho's too dangerous. If we send Doohee home, he's the link that's connecting Yuan and Jinho, and they will fracture, and that powerhouse of three big thinkers will be out of the way.
Well, and by him losing this match, I guess spoilers, whatever, by sending himself via like a roundabout double cross, it makes it less, it feels less like he was betrayed and like he was unfairly sent there. Like, he was betrayed, but it doesn't feel like, oh, I didn't leave this episode feeling bad for Doohee. I was like, oh, well, he got fucked over. Yeah, that happened. It's a bummer. But he did try to fight back. He wasn't like foolishly, because he says like in his elimination, like, I trusted too many people. And I think that was somewhat true, but like, there's nothing, you can't counter Songmin's plays in this episode. There's no good way to fix that. Somebody's going to get fucked over by him this week.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened to land on our nice boy, our nice hacker boy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's true.
In reality, we have Doohee and I believe, is it Yuyoung that go to the DM? Yeah.
Yeah. But before we talk more about the DM, because we've kind of been a little scattershot here, you had some homework.
I did homework. Fuck, what? Oh, yeah. The space. I went to space.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really fun. First of all, people should listen to the last episode of The Garden Wager, because it was one of our best, I think. If you're not listening in order, then what are you doing?
It'd be a strange choice.
Yeah. Six assigned me the task of going to space. And when specified, V said I should go to space in Kerbal Space Program, the video game, the simulation game?
Yeah.
There's physics going on in that game for sure.
It takes some liberties, but like astronauts and stuff and astronomers commend its rigor. So like it takes some liberties, but it's like, no, this is fairly realistic.
It's putting the work in the right places, definitely. So a couple things. First of all, Kerbal Space Program has been around for a really long time. I have been hearing about it for like 8 years now, I think. People have been talking about Kerbal Space Program, about KSP, and how it's been like in beta and it came out and it's kind of janky, but the people who like it love it. And I never understood it. I loved watching it. I love watching YouTube people and various personalities play this game. But I never thought it would be for me. And I was very intimidated by it at first, because I had understood that your homework as you wanted me to go to the moon. And turns out, just like in real life, going to the moon is freaking hard.
Mm-hmm.
So what you were saying is, no, it's not like that's, you know, a cool pie in the sky, literally goal, because the moon is made out of pie. But all you wanted me to do was to get a spaceship into Earth's or into whatever, Kerbin's orbit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the game's substitute for Earth. Which at first I couldn't even begin to think about how I would do it. I tried doing the work and looked up like builds and YouTube tutorials on how to do it. But again, since this game's been around for so long, that stuff is really impenetrable as it is right now.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, a lot of people that play Kerbal Space Program or have done videos about it assume you've been playing it and give you tutorials that are more about, like, making optimal builds and stuff. Like, it's like looking up, like, a how to play Dota video right now. We're like, well, this thing's been around for so long that, like, just watching someone tell you, like, how to play Dota would be, like, a really daunting task. In reality, you kind of just have to play it. So I started to on, like, an early morning. And eventually started messaging you, and you were like, here's where you start. And then we just got on a call, and we were off to the races, and I think that was one of the best calls I've been on, like, ever. It was so fun. That game unlocked, like, Kingdom Hearts in that moment. When you were telling me, like, because you're also so good at, like, you're a very good teacher. Because you're able to teach without talking down to your students, and also while making the thing that you're teaching sound really exciting. So I was like, basically at first just following your directions. It's like building Legos, where you're like, you should put this and this together, and I'm like, well, I get that I should do that, but I don't really know why.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you were like, well, what do you think you should do here? And that moment where I understood, like, oh, this thing's aerodynamically gonna fit in this place and make this really cool shape that's going to come off in this way, and then we would try it, And I think one of the coolest things about Kerbal Space Program that I didn't understand from watching it is failure is entirely part of the process. It's like arguably the most important part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, yeah, you're eventually going to want to do a successful run, and that's going to be really exciting. But you don't – Rome wasn't built in a day. Rome was built after several explosive heat deaths of Valentina Kerbin. God, you're just like, all right, here's my build. All right, it's launching. Oh, whoops. Okay, it fell apart immediately. All right, let's back it up. But instead of just, like, save scumming the way that I do in a lot of games – you were like, no, this can be taken. You can take these guys home. And that was where I was like, I think I love this. I think this is beautiful. There's something about like accepting failure and leaning into your mistakes and building on them and learning from them.
Mm-hmm.
And bouncing back without just hitting the reset button that I really... It's like really... Because you don't have a reset button in real life. Like, you can't just keep on trying from zero with no repercussions. Mm-hmm. Because really all you have to lose is your Kerbins. Like, there's no... We were playing in sim mode, so there's no, like, money mechanic or resource. The Kerbins are just named animated creatures, but they're infinite. The same one will come up in your list several times, but I still was like, no, I want to bring them back. They can't die. They need to live through this. So, you know, the recovery missions were a lot of fun, but also just the way that the scale pulls out... Mm-hmm. Like, you go from understanding how to get into the sky to, like, all right, now you're going to want to start turning. And I'm like, wait, why would a spaceship turn? And you realize that you're now way above the atmosphere and you're no longer trying to go up anymore because up doesn't matter. You're trying to enter orbit. And then you're like, all right, well, now you're going to zoom out. You're going to freeze time. You're going to plot angles. And, like, just you're watching the circle of your trajectory change. It's beautiful. It's like, I'm such a sucker for like stuff like the TV show Cosmos and just any media that reminds us that we're really insignificant specks of dust. Mm-hmm. Like, I find that stuff really beautiful and inspiring, actually. And as soon as you get into orbit and you're no longer like even considering like the thrust of your ship anymore because it's just going and all you're thinking about is like, how can I border this celestial body? It like... There's like a beautiful feel. It's so beautiful. I don't know how to describe it.
It's really special. I feel like, so for me, a big part of, like, I enjoyed that call a lot too. And so we had screen sharing on thanks to Discord's great features. And at first it was just me being like, okay, you're going to need a command capsule. No, you don't want that one. You're going to want an engine. That engine's a bad idea, right? Like sort of like dictating. But once you had a baseline, what I really enjoyed was when we got to a point where it's like, okay, you understand the absolute basics of building a ship. And you do a little building and you're like, okay, like, I want more rockets. What should I get? And I'm like, oh, these are a good idea. And like, and you're building, and you're like, okay, I think we're good to go. And in my head, I go, you don't have a heat shield. And I say, okay, let's launch it.
Right. And you're like, well, let's find this out as it happens.
Exactly. Because I feel like that's the best way to learn Kerbin. Our Kerbal Space Program is these like not spectacular failures, but just these like different steps of like, oh, and so like when we made the same mistake twice in a row, I'd be like, don't forget your thingy. But like the moment of like the first time I went to the moon, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I built this rocket. I built this multi-stage rocket. I have enough thrust. I know how to do the Delta V. I know how to get to the moon. I'm going to land this motherfucker on the moon. And I started flying down towards the moon, and I hit the landing gear button. And I was like, I don't have any fucking landing gear. I'm just like a missile flying at this fucking rock. I got to the moon
and I can't touch it.
And it was a really heartbreaking moment, but it was also, I mean, like, it was a really special moment of like, oh. And every time thereafter, like when I hit that landing gear, I'm like, that's right. I got landing gear this time. And then, like, I've done it, you know, a dozen more times. I'm no Kerbal Space Program sage. I've never been to Duna, which is their equivalent to Mars. But, like, I've done some stuff, and it's like those little lessons that you learn the harsh way really stick with you and become really special with time.
It's so... And to get back to that scale thing that we're talking about, You go from, like, your mistakes in the first stage of Kerbal Space Program are like, oh, my rockets are jiggly and they don't fit correctly. But the mistakes you make on the larger scale are, like, again, make me feel like a tingle in my stomach. Like, I, one of our runs, I think probably the best run of all of them was, I had put too much propulsion and didn't turn enough. So, my ship just basically blasted right out of Earth's orbit. And I was like, all right, well, that was bunk. And you were like, no, look where it's going. And I pulled the map out, and it was on track to get to Mars. It would never land, and it would eventually, like, collide with Mars. But you were like, I think you just did it. I think you just, you got there, basically, by accident. Yeah.
And so then we had the moment of, like, okay, like, well, let's try again and be like, I really want to get to the moon. I need to add more fuel. And it was like, Alan, we had enough fuel to get to Mars. We're fine.
you can get anywhere, basically.
Yeah.
It's a matter, and like the other, I don't know if it was, I think it was a different run, but sending one off, because I just did a couple of like fuck it runs, and one that just sent off and its orbit got so weird that it was no longer in any other planet's orbit. It was just orbiting the sun, and you were like, Alan, I think you made a planet. I was like, holy shit, what? By accident, I created a celestial body in this spaceship game. Oh, I love sim games. It's so good.
It's really good. I'd love to. I'm actually making my friend Nick play some Kerbal Space Program coming up. And we may do a stream of it, of him learning how to play with me in his ear, because that's just a fun thing to do.
Really, like, yeah. I mean, I'd probably have fun with it, and eventually that cool stuff would happen. And there's definitely a joy, if you're listening at home and you want to play this game, to just, like, just go in there and put stuff together and then launch it and see what it does. Figure out exactly why it didn't work and put something else on it. There isn't that much equipment in the game. It's just a matter of where you place it and how you place it and in what order and stuff like that. The physics are a little bit wonky and the controls are a little bit finicky, but you can do it. You can go from not knowing how to play to getting to the moon in, like, an hour or two.
And the moment that you first, like, you build your first spaceship and it gets on the launch pad and it's, like, 30 engines sort of, like, jiggling against each other because the physics are trying to figure out how that should even hold together. And then you hit the go button and it just starts inching off the ground and you're like, wait, I have 30 engines. Why isn't it? It's like, ah, Kerbal gotcha.
Ah, the Kerbal moment.
Yep.
Oh, it's so very good. Rewarding. It's very rewarding and fun. I still really want to get to the moon. I want to land on the moon. Because you can, like, and this is just the nice thing about it being a sim game, is when you want to say fuck it, you can do some really wild stuff. Like, I had a ship that was just, like, spinning out of control, and you can, like, go inside the cockpit and see what the Kerbal sees, and the Kerbal just, like, you look out their window, and it's just, like, hellish. You're watching the Earth spin by you at 8,000 miles a minute. And then the game totally lets you just go, yeah, I want my Kerbin to step out of the ship right now and just explore the world at 8 million miles of rotation per hour. Like, oh, and it's so funny. They do it. Like, you can do that. It doesn't break. The game lets you do that.
I had a moment, actually, like, the same day that after we did this. Before
bunch of it, right?
Yeah, I played some more. And I had a moment that was most, like, it was really humbling of, like, how much I take for granted the parts of the game I don't know. And one of the parts of the game I don't know is, so when you are in space and you try and make a ship meet another ship or a person meet a ship, basically two moving objects connect that are in orbit, that's called rendezvous, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, I was like, I'm gonna, like, have my, like, I got a ship in orbit, and I was like, I'm gonna have my Kerbal knot hop out and do some sick tricks and then get back in the ship. I did the sick tricks, and then getting back in the ship was a 25-minute endeavor.
Why? What happened?
Because orbital physics are hard because there are so many different vectors you can accelerate on, and it is super, like, the most basic mistake is if you want to get closer to something, you don't accelerate towards it,
right? Yeah.
You don't do that, and it's like, it's really like, it's like, oh, okay, I understand that principle, but your brain doesn't, and you're trying to do the thing and you're like, oh,
don't understand. I keep getting close, and it gets further away, and I don't. Now, am I too high, or am I too far forward, or, oh, I'm angled the wrong way. All these thrusters, I'm running out of thrust. It's like, and it was just this huge, and I finally got him back in. But it was unreal.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it really does, it recreates that moment in Apollo 13 where they land the ship. Because you're just like, this is gonna crash and burn. And then you pull some spicy bullshit or the game's physics work in a cool way. And you're like, oh my god, we're here. We landed. I landed a couple crash ships in our time with it. And I was like, this is a really fun feeling. Like, if anything, I'm sure there is a audience that plays this game just to make really bad ships and then successfully land somewhere.
There are mods you can download that are just like, this ship is in this shitty situation. Get them down to the ground without dying.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
5 stars.
Awesome. Yeah. So we've now both given each other 5 stars. Hope my next recommendation holds up.
I promised myself I would never give 5 stars to a video game recommendation, and look where we are. It's amazing.
It is.
I want to go to space.
Let's talk about our death match.
Whoo, boy. So, couple things. First of all, bit disappointed in what this death match was. A little bit. Like, eh. Because it was the... What is the name of that game?
Blackout Game.
It's Blackout Game again, which was a main match, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a main match like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And now it's a DM, but it's the only difference is it's... So is it like restructured in that the people in the DM each are on a team, and if their team wins, then they win?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's just sort of like it only matters for the captains, basically.
Right. And again, just speaking of collapsing stars, Doohy has a good team. He has a bunch of people promised to work with him. Push comes to shove, nobody works with him. Game over.
Only one person matters. He all-ins immediately on the first person, and that person betrays him.
Right. G1, pick green. Just pick green. All right, I promise you I'll pick green. G1, you would never lie to me. Come on, G1, you got this, please? All right, yeah, of course, I'll pick green. It's like a cartoon six. It's just cut to the game. Lights go out. Everybody walks across. G1, head in hands. Why does he look so sad? What's going to happen? G1 has selected red. What the fuck? Like, just... And then Dewey's reaction of like, oh, yep. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going home, aren't I? Like, the acceptance is real bad. It's real sad.
He's pissed. But, like, Doohy pissed is just, like... I relate a lot to it, honestly, which is
same,
just, like,
the
quiet,
quiet
internal
like...
fuming. Just, like, you feel, like, kind of restless, but, like, you're not making a sound. You're just like, I should have fucking known. God damn it.
Oh my god, it happened so fast. It's like the fastest DM of all time. When it's honestly, dude, that's a bad play to go all in on that, like to trust one person that much. I think so. But it should have worked. It shouldn't have blown up in his face like this. He could have been fine. After all the crap that happened to him in the main match, he could have recovered and been fine. We would have been like, oh, well, you know, good on Doohy for making it out of that. Bummer to see Yu Young out of the game.
I mean, this episode is pure politics, and the deathmatch is no exception. I mean, like...
Yeah.
G1... Well, like, I feel for G1 here, honestly.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's fair, but it's like G1's in the position where he, like, he screwed over... So let's talk about, we didn't ever talk about, like, so the reveal is that G1 is the one who took it with assistance from Yu Young.
Yeah, because they've been friends for the whole game.
But the way that moment actually goes is that, like, they both walk forward and Yu Young, like, pushes the ID to G1 and G1 picks it up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that is, like, it has the most, I'm sorry, high school-ass tone, right? Of your friend being like, this is going to be great, just play along. And you being like, yeah, okay, this is going to be great. And then later, Jiwon is like feeling so much regret, and he's like, I feel so bad. We have to give this back.
But he doesn't.
Well, because right after he says that, outside in the lobby, Doohee's like, hey, Jinho, can I borrow your badge for a sec? And Jinho's like, yeah, okay. I trust you. And Doohee comes in and is like, look, guys, I found my badge, and shows them the back of it. And in that moment, it's like, how the fuck do you reveal it now? It's like, now not only have you taken it from him, but now he's pretending that everything's fine?
Yeah.
Like, that, like, I totally would have frozen up the way Jiwon did. I wouldn't have known what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
So that Jiwon's like, wait, how do I return it now? He says he has his, and I know he doesn't, but, like, do I just, like, am I like, here's the thing I stole from you, you liar? Like, I can't do that.
You can't have your ID, I have it. Wait a minute.
Yeah, it's such an awkward position. And so he feels really bad for Doohee when he finally gives it back. He's like, I really want to help you out, but it's like, if you'd picked anyone else, he would have. But you picked Yu Young, who he's been pretty ride or die with since literally the beginning, as you said.
Their relationship does feel very high school, though, because it's one of those things where, like, to them, their relationship has been awesome and, like, powerful and good. But we've never seen it manifest itself in the game. It's just been them being friendly and giving each other hints the whole game.
I mean, like, he offered to let, like, In the first main match,
yeah, actually,
offered to let himself be eaten, and like it was sort of an offer out of manners. It's like when a mouse is alone in a room with an eagle, like the eagle doesn't need your fucking permission, but but like it was a gesture of like, hey, no, listen, it's important that you win here,
right?
You know, right. And like. They, like, we saw them work together on stealing the ID. We've seen them cooperate, you know, in smaller ways, but on previous games, like, they have consistently worked together.
True. It's not, sorry, I don't mean to suggest that it's only between them, but it's more like that reveal of, like, the montage made me go, like, oh, wait, I didn't notice any of this. Like, this was in the background the whole time, and I didn't see it. Like something out of, like, again, like out of Game of Thrones or something, where
mm-hmm.
two characters are like, we were playing this all along, and then we get a flashback that's like, oh my god, they totally were, and I didn't even see it. And it's like, seems clever to them, but I'm like, that's cool, I guess.
I feel like it's actually some clever editing, because I feel like they're trying to get you in Dewey's headspace, because Doohee didn't obviously didn't notice it.
Right, right? Yeah. And this is all the flashback stuff is footage from the show that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like bonus stuff that we wouldn't have seen.
But you know, the narrator's like, Doohee didn't put together that they were good friends. And it's like, because we edited it this way, neither did you. It's like, okay, that's fair. That's fair.
The show's playing with me a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think this episode, a couple things happen. Sorry to turn into Austin Walker at Friends at the Table, but a couple things happen at once.
Time gets broken.
Time gets broken. You try to open the store.
You fail to roll, so I'm going to hold a hostage.
Risky standard. So Doohee takes his jacket off. That was a really intense moment where he's like, ooh, ooh, just like ripping his clothes, like taking his clothes off. Like, oh, I'm just mad. I've been defeated. And speaking of like this episode having things to say to the viewer, I think it has more than just like, it's not just playing with their expectations. It's trying to say something morally, because Doohee even has that line at the end where he's like, I think the exact wording was, trusting people isn't wrong, is it?
Yeah.
Like, fuck. Like, wait, are we... Like, I know that that's implicit in the show's narrative throughout from minute one, is you have to decide whether or not to trust people and how to trust people. But I've never had it implicitly said, like, explicitly said by a character to me.
And it feels like that moment was like aimed to make the person sitting on their couch with like the song mean hat and like the song mean number one foam finger to go, damn
shit, sip from my song mean drinking hat. it's thought provoking. I was like, yeah, I guess. Like, I already know. I like to think I have a pretty decent barometer for who and how much to trust people, but I still struggle with that. Everyone struggles with that.
Sure.
And it's very, like, It's more thought provoking than the show usually is. It was just really interesting to like have the character say that. Because I know like we give a lot of negativity towards like the people's exit speeches, especially this season, because they're often not as exciting as they felt like they were the first season. But that one is definitely like, oh man, yeah, huh?
Yeah, he had a lot of really like it sort of. There were several parts to it, but across the board, it felt really strong and really. Really from the heart in a way that I appreciated a lot, because it felt like Doohy was, like, you know, he talks about, like, I spent my whole life sitting in front of a computer watching folks like you on TV.
Right.
And I got a chance to be here. And so, like, of course I'm going to trust you. Like, I've been looking up to you for all this time. And, like, was that wrong?
Right.
And it's just like, oh,
woof indeed.
Oh, yeah, it's.
I love the feeling that this episode gave me. All of the feelings are good. The Genius doesn't have to be a show that's thought-provoking or emotionally resonant. It doesn't have to. It can just get there by default. But when it does stuff like this, it's like really a testament to how cool this show is. That a bunch of Korean celebrities who I hadn't heard of beforehand are like making me question my morality and like the way that I trust people, in a game show.
Yeah, it was really strong.
The best episode of The Genius?
Yeah, I think this is the best episode of The Genius we've seen. And I know like for a lot of people they're gonna say like it was a great episode of TV, it was not a great episode of The Genius, right?
Sure, because it's barely like they don't play the game and it's different and the DM brain breaks in a weird way, yeah.
And I'm totally sympathetic to that perspective. I get it, you know. But I also feel like The Genius is, I don't know, like, The Genius is ultimately about people. Some people, so like, folks a lot of the time want to make it about, like, puzzles and mental challenges and, like, tense situations and, you know, like celebrations of intellectualism, right?
Yeah.
And I think all of those things are valuable, but they're valuable as ways to draw out people's personality and humanity.
Yeah.
Those things are valuable because they show us who these people are. And they show us, they show us often the best sides of them.
Exactly. Sorry to step on your words, but it's just, it makes us think. It makes us think about things that are important to ourselves and we're learning it through real people, like, and this is not we talk about so much. This is not scripted.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a real play that real people did, in a fun moment of passion and excitement that really resonated. It was incredible.
Yeah. I feel like what made this episode, like, Doohy getting eliminated, is part of what makes this the best episode of The Genius that we've seen, is because at the end of it, a great player went home.
Right.
And he went home because he was a little too human in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly. He went home for really sad reasons. Not because he was bad. Not because he was, not just because he was effed over, but because he trusted and cared a lot and just made, you know, bad shit happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole lot.
Yeah, it's a really phenomenal episode of the show. And I'm, I don't know. This is, I don't watch TV very often.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of my favorite episodes of TV.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And, you know, it's been only a couple of hours since I've seen it. His reaction's coming off pretty hot.
Spice take. Like,
it really blew me away.
Can you watch this episode? Can I show someone this episode out of context? Will they still get anything out of it?
I think you can, but I don't think it'll mean the same.
Yeah, that's, for sure.
I feel like a lot of it will be lost if you don't have at least the context of this season.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have to know about Doohee's role in the group, and you have to know about Songmin's personality in the group, and
you have to know that this isn't ordinary, you know? Like,
yeah, this is a non-standard episode for sure.
I feel like that's really key. Because if you're like, oh, so this is just a show where people are shitty, it's like, no. No, it's not.
Right. I know a couple of people who, when I recommended this show, were like, I don't like, you know, watching people fuck each other over or, like, be mean to each other. Like, that's the thing I don't like about reality TV. And, mm-hmm. you know, in the first season, we, especially early on, were so impressed at the show's ability to be respect, like the characters and the players rather, to be respectful and nice to each other while still like having decorum but also being competitive. And now mm-hmm. it's like they're still decorum and they're still competitive, but they're doing the thing that we were worried about before, which is fucking each other over, but it's cool. And there's actually no bad blood between them because that's the game.
Yeah. And like, I don't, like, I still like, yeah, no, like people are like, oh, I don't want to watch this show because I can't stand the way reality TV is about, like, nastiness and fucking cheap people over. Like, yeah, no shit. Like, I was once part of a bachelorette fantasy league. I couldn't make it through an episode.
Oh, man.
I was having such a bad time because everyone was such a miserable person. Like, I'm not here for fucking people being shitty either. That's right. What makes the genius special.
Yeah.
Huh. You want to talk about fantasy points?
I do, please.
Okay, so this week was another victory for me. I got 41 fantasy points while you got 6. And that brings our totals up to, I'm at 194, you're at 166.
That's you, it's your name. I have accepted that I'm probably not going to win this season because my players at their best aren't going to win a lot of fantasy points, even if they survive long.
I mean, it's fun. I Gino like wins a lot when he gets opportunities.
When he does, but he just hasn't.
I mean, not the last two episodes. He's still probably overall the most profitable player. He's got 117 points total. Okay, Songmin has more than that, but still.
I feel like I'm worried about Gino.
Yeah?
To be honest with you. I mean, he's not winning again. No, that's not going to happen. I'm telling you that right now.
No, I don't think so either.
But, like, I don't know if he's, like, I don't know. It's weird because on one hand, I think he's going to get fucked over. But on the other hand, how does he lose a DM? What can you even envision a DM where Gino loses?
A popularity contest.
Pick your favorite and then they win.
Fashion show.
Oh, fuck. You're right.
If he's up against Hong Chul, he's done. Hong Chul's outfit this week was incredible.
That's true. It's always incredible. Come on. You know, hair is different every week. It's just like, God.
He has good hair every week. I don't know about his outfits every time, but this time, like, the bowler hat with, like, the plaid scarf was fantastic. It was extremely good.
This is, you do that meme where it's, like, zero, no fears. And then we cut to a DM where it's StarCraft and he has to play against Imyuan. And then Jino's like one fear. Like, that's just, they literally have to, they put two CRT monitors in the middle of the lobby and it just has Brood War running. And then Yuan's like, come on, let's go. And Jino just breaks down and cries. And he's like, can I leave early? And they're like, no, you got to play it. Come on, it'll be fun. You can win. I don't want to see that.
Jinho and Yuan are hanging out, and then Yuan's like, oh, my phone's ringing. He pulls out his phone, and you just hear, nuclear launch detected.
Nuclear
launch detected. And Jinho just starts crying.
He, like, jumps under the table in fear, and then is just sobbing, yeah. Oh, no, I don't want to see that. I like Jinho. He's nice.
He's a good boy.
So you're redrafting also, correct?
I am. Because, of course, Doohee went home. So at this point, I only have two options.
Jiwon and Yu Young?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you taking?
I'm taking Jiwon.
Fuck! Okay.
I don't know that he's going to last much longer. But he's a fucking ride, and I want to I want to see where this goes. I want to feel invested in his story.
The story, the narrative of Ju-on.
Indeed. This does mean, however, that you get to give me a new stipulation.
That's true. So six, in honor of the back and forth in this episode, I think we should start rewarding 5 points to a player who makes a deal with somebody else, makes a promise to somebody else, and then does not back up their half of the bargain.
Wow, that's plus points?
Yeah.
You're a motherfucker.
We're playing the devil's game now, friend.
Jesus. All right.
You would think that should be like a hard minus. Like, don't be mean. But this is the Genius Season 2 rule breakers. The people who fuck others over are going to win this thing. No more friendships. Except Ju-on and Ju-on and Yu-Hong are still on this. So.
All right. But anyway, well, yeah. Okay. I guess that's the new deal. And for
no,
your
the new
homework.
Deal's like a political thing, my friend.
Oh, right. Right. Mm-hmm. Teddy mm-hmm. Roosevelt. Yeah, so your homework for next episode, hopefully should be a pretty easy breezy, beautiful one for you.
Oh, I get to.
I want you to apply some cover girl. No. what I actually want, since I am apparently Sax Detmar, I would like you to listen to the album Turnabout Jazz Soul.
Oh.
Which is a official jazz band cover album of the songs of the Ace Attorney series.
Oh my god, I was totally going to say that sounds like a funny Ace Attorney joke. Good shit.
So just listen to that whole album, and or half an hour of it, but I think it's only a little bit more than that, and I think you'll like it, so.
I love the music of Ace Attorney. Is this on YouTube? Is this on, like, a free place?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I'm excited. I have always wanted to get more into jazz.
Excellent. Well, I hope this is a helpful road toward that goal. But, folks, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Garnet Wager. We are now in the plug zone, and so I would like Alan to plug their things.
You didn't do some spicy bullshit to get us here?
It's true. I didn't.
Oh my god, this is really just a different episode across the board for both the Genius and for the TGW. Wow. Deep breaths, everyone. You can follow me online at twitter.com/AlanIbrahim. That's AlanIbrahim. I'm not really active on there over the summer, as I've mentioned before, but I'd love it if I got some new followers when I came back. You can also listen to my silly voice on two other podcasts. One is Chats, a television podcast. That's a TV discussion pod where my friend John and I watch two episodes of shows and talk about them. Right now we're watching Pushing Daisies, and we're like more than halfway done with it. So get excited for new things there. I am also co-hosting Fireside Friends, which can be found at firesidefriends.net. And that's where Ryan, Katie, and I talk about pop culture and how it affects our lives in an interesting roundtable sort of way every month. Six, plug your stuff.
So I'm Six Detmar. You can find me on Twitter at Six Detmar. That's SIXDETTMAR. I also am on some other podcasts. You can hear the bumper at the end of the episode because I'm helpful and I made that for you. I want to give a big thank you to listener Reese, who we mentioned repeatedly, but, you know, has just done great work helping us, like, create some of the infrastructure for, like, Fantasy Genius and just been all overall helpful presence for us here on the show. And also all of our listeners, everybody from Genius Orgs and stuff who gives this show a listen. We really appreciate it. It really means a lot to us. But yeah, I think that's it for this week. So until the next week. I can't do that again. I did that previously, that gag where I just didn't say anything.
Yeah, I was like, because I also think that there's Skype, there's a Discord lag when you do that. So I'm like, yeah. Oh, shit, I missed it. I guess I'll hear it in post.
Well, stay hydrated.
Glug, glug, glug.
Peace out. You're listening to a Scanline Media Network podcast. Check out our other podcasts, like Bottle Crow Reborn. So here's the thing, Nick.
Nobody cares.
No.
It's not about that.
You actually convinced me.
Shit.
The Garnet Wager. And immediately we get Yunji being like, so hang on. why does everyone call Jin-Ho Kong? And Jin-Ho, like, really circuitously explains because they're making fun of me.
Like, it means bean, but it's all, like, small person, and, like, I'm...
Neutral game.
So, if you're averse to frame data, you can still play the game, and it'll just sometimes take longer to figure some stuff out.
Oops, all anime gaiden. I've known some podcasters with taste, and they're all cowards. Let's talk about today's menu.
Oh my God.
For the Emiya family. Operation Cereal.
Episode 4 yep. was a bit more understandable, but also, I continue to sour on these kids. I think they're dicks.
Okay, that's fair.
And our patron-only podcast, Oops All Anime.
And he has the blessed privilege of getting an invite. He shreds it in front of her, looks her in the eye, like touches
wipes
her face.
A tear off of her eye.
Wipes a tear off of her eye and goes, I'll kill you.
Visit Scanline Media at scanlinemedia.com and our Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia.